With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Little Atoms, a radio show about ideas and culture, with me, Neil Denny. This week, acclaimed Danish author Dorte Knaus on her latest novel, Mirror Shoulder Signal. Dorte Knaus was born in 1970 and is one of the most original voices in contemporary Danish literature. She holds a degree in literature and art history from Aarhus University and has published four novels so far, including Mirror Shoulder Signal, which was shortlisted for the Man Booker International Prize, and which we're going to talk about today, as well as the short story collection Karate Chop and a novella, Minna Needs Rehearsal Space. Her short stories have appeared in numerous publications, including Harper Magazine and the Boston Review, and she is the first Danish writer ever to have a story published in the New Yorker. So, Dorte, welcome to Little Atoms.
Thank you.
How would you describe Mirror Shoulder Signal, the novel?
Well, good question. It's a story about a woman aged 40, a little over 40, who's trapped in Copenhagen, trapped in the middle of her life, and looking for a way out, or at least looking for a way to find herself there in the middle of her life. And we follow her as she goes to driving school in order to get her driver's license so she can drive out of Copenhagen. But the question is, where is she going to drive to? Basically, I think it's a book about midlife crisis. And these books have been written for centuries, but they've all been about men having midlife crisis. But in this case, it's a woman. And it was interesting to investigate what that meant, to have the luxury of having a midlife crisis, because that is actually a luxury to have, because for generations, women didn't have a midlife crisis because they were working or, you know, taking care of children or were not allowed to ponder that much on where they were going to go with their life. So I think it's about that.
Well, I'll take it a little further than that as well, because Sonia's, not only is she in her 40s, embarking on a midlife crisis, she's currently single. You don't see that many protagonists, women in their 40s anyway, or older. But if they are, they're probably in a more traditional role as a mother. She's childless. So there's lots of ways in which Sonia is an unusual protagonist. Why did you want to write about her?
Because she's like most of the friends I have. I mean, this is really strange that literature don't have many protagonists like that, but life has. There are a lot of women who don't live, like, using quotations, Mark, you know, like we're supposed to. There are a lot of women who don't have children, or who have children and who have them on their own, or who are not married, or who are in and out of relationships, that don't live neat and tidy in that sort of shapes form that society wants from us. But literature haven't depicted it. They haven't shown these women. And it's not like I sat down and thought, I want to write about these women because there really needs to be, you know, books about them. It's just the life I live, that's how I live, and that's how my friends live. We don't live traditional lives as such. So I wanted to, you know, shed a light on that.
The novel is told entirely from Sonia's perspective, but it's not a first-person story. Tell me about the perspective.
It is from her perspective, but there's nothing harder in the world to write than first person present tense. So I wanted to sort of have a larger knowledge, to bring that a larger knowledge into the character than she has herself. And in order to do that, you have to sort of see her from above at the same time as being inside her. And I wanted to, at the same time as being very, very close to her inner thoughts, her inner monologues, her inner views on things, her memory, all these things, I also wanted to be detached from it so I could see what it was about. In all my writing, I love the inner monologue. When I write short stories, that's my favorite thing about those, is that I can enter the mind of a character, be it a male or a female, a child, a grown up, a psychopath, a saint, whatever it is, be able to enter and sort of become their voice for a brief moment in time and see the world from their viewpoint. With a novel, that's different because you have to stay with them for 3 years, but it's a very good position to write from. It's a good question. I never thought about it, why I chose that, but I guess I choose that position a lot when I write.
You've described your writing elsewhere as minimalism that is under attack from within. What do you mean by that?
I mean, there's a lot of compression in my literature. There's a lot tied, a lot of emotions, a lot of past, a lot of memory, a lot of unspoken things trapped beneath the lines. And minimalism is a very Danish stylistic thing. There's a lot of very cool aesthetic minimalism going on in Denmark because the Danish language calls for that. It's a very sparse language. We don't have as many words as the English language has. So minimalism is the easy way out of that. And I trained in the Swedish literature. And the Swedish literature is much more filled with existential conflict. It's much more classic. It has more volume. It's bigger. And I loved that. I loved all the conflicts and all the black stuff that was going on in Swedish literature. So I guess that at one point I found out how I could pair these two things, how I could have that Danish form, that aesthetic minimalist form, but have that Swedish content, you could say, that sort of compression from within, that this minimalism tries to investigate the maximalist issues. But, you know, again, that's aftermath because I didn't think about that when I started finding that voice. That just happened as I wrote a lot of stuff and rehearsed a lot.
And you mentioned that Sonja in the story is located in Copenhagen, but she comes from the countryside, far out of Copenhagen, Western Jutland. Can you tell us what that land is like?
Well, it's a very big contradiction in her life because there's only one big city, like one big, big city in Denmark, and that is Copenhagen. Then we have Aarhus, which is not that big. But apart from that, it's rural country and it's provincial cities. It's not that big. And then when you come to the western part of Denmark, the population is small. There's huge landscapes. People live traditional lives. You're just very far away mentally from urbanism. So she has that contradiction in her soul, in her spirit, and in her past that she comes from one predicament, one way of living, and has, in order to become who she was supposed to become, which is have a university degree and educate herself, she had to move and transform into urbanism. And that conflict is very common in Denmark. I found when I do readings from this novel in Denmark, always afterwards, there will be a man around 30, 40, 50, or a woman, 30, 40, 50, saying to me, I'm like Sonja. And what they mean is not that they don't know how to drive. It's that they also have that sort of split identity between the rural and the big city.
And I noticed there's also a lot of weather in the novel, thunder in particular.
Yeah, well, this story takes place during the summer and the late summer, in August, September, and we have a lot of thunderstorms in those months. When I did it, it's also, of course, you can't write a book without having the weather in there. I always get very suspicious when the weather is not in a book. because the weather is such a big part of our lives. I mean, we may not be conscious of it, but we are always adapting to what kind of weather there is around us. So weather is important to have a good feeling, a good sense of presence in a text, I think. The other thing is, I remember that when I put in a lot of thunderstorms there, I don't know if you know it, if you read really closely, there is a lot of talk, or Sonia thinks a lot about the connection between the earth and the sky. And I actually do think sometimes that the thunder comes when there is a connection, at least in her mind, between where she is and where she wants to go. But you could read closer and find out. You know, the writer doesn't always know why we put stuff in there, but I can't remember something I wrote of a longer, in longer forms where the weather wasn't part of it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to Little Atoms. I'm Neil Denny. Today I'm talking to Daughter Nors, and we're talking about her novel, Mirror Shoulder Signal. And Daughter, as you've mentioned at the beginning, Sonia is taking driving lessons badly. She's not progressing. She has trouble changing gears. And again, this reflects the stasis, the anxiety that she feels in her life, I guess. Tell us why you chose that method, the idea of taking driving tests as a test.
I think there were two reasons. One reason was that I had just finished the novella Milanese Rehearsal Space and was thinking about new material for a novel. I was sitting in Copenhagen and I thought, what am I going to write about? I remember looking down on Vesterbrogade, one of the most busy streets in Copenhagen, and looking at the cars, and I thought, oh God, it was so hard taking that driving license. That was really existential. That was really crazy, taking the driver's license. So maybe that was material. And then I wrote the first chapter, and I thought something could evolve from this. And the reason why it's existential is that when a grown-up person, not like an 18-year-old, but a real grown-up person takes a driver's license, we're usually matured and we're sort of, you know, in control of our being. We handle our lives. We have our own homes. We have our own partners and friends. And then suddenly not being able to drive, it's like being completely nullified as an adult. And also you have to deposit all your free will in the driving instructor, and the driving instructor might not be a very nice person. So there was a lot of things about relationships, about being an adult or not being able to be an adult, or and that whole existential stuff that was so interesting. The other thing was political, or more political, I would say, and that is that a lot of people in my generation don't have a driver's license because they moved from the countryside to the big cities when they were very young. And in the big cities, they didn't need a driver's license. And now suddenly in middle life, they find that they might not want to live in the city anymore, but they can't live anywhere else because living somewhere else means that you have to learn how to drive. So the driver's license theme also became a theme that circles around geographical emancipation and the whole divide that there is in the Western world right now between the traditional rural or industrial areas of the country and the urbanized and sometimes very posh or exclusive parts of a nation. So that's why I did it, I think.
And you mentioned in taking driving lessons, you might end up with a perhaps not very nice instructor. And indeed, Sonia has two instructors through this book, a woman called Yuda, who's very sort of combative and aggressive towards her, and Volker, who's a married man, of which there's, I mean, a certain amount of sort of sexual tension, I guess, between the two. Tell me about these two different people.
Well, in the first case, we meet with Yuda, who's around 60. She's like working class. She has a, you know, foul mouth. She swears a lot. She's a racist. She's so sick and tired of being a driving instructor, I think. So she's doing everything but learning the student to drive. And with her, it was interesting because I wanted to portray one of these kids from the rural areas who went to Copenhagen in order to become someone when they were young. And this woman has really not amounted to much from doing so. And I wanted to portray that not all people who try to get more status from leaving the agricultural areas and become urbanized became who they were supposed to become in their own eyes. And Volker, I think the sexual tension in the car comes from Sonia. I actually don't think it comes from him. I just think he enjoys very much that he finally has a student his own age and that he has somebody to talk to in the car. The sexual paranoia comes from Sonia. She's constantly afraid that this driving experience will turn into something that she doesn't want it to be. She constantly says that she's so sick and tired of always getting more than she paid for, and she's so scared that she's going to get more than she paid for also there. But Folke is basically just enjoying having somebody in the car who understands his world, I think.
Another central relationship in the book is Sonia's relationship with her sister Kate, who all through the book is basically refusing to speak to her. Why are they not speaking?
This is, I think, the most interesting and most important relationship in the book, and one that I found very interesting, investigating, also painful. The sister stayed back home. She lives a traditional life. She has a husband, two kids. She has a golden retriever. And there's nothing, she's never drawn outside the lines. And then Sonia has left that whole situation, has urbanized herself, has studied at university. So these two sisters might have had their fates and their lives and their history woven together at one point, but now they can hardly communicate. And I think a lot of families recognize this, that we get estranged or dislocated from the ones that we truly love. And Sonia is desperately trying to wind back time in order to get that relationship with the sister, but it's lost because they don't have the same interests. They don't have the same language. They don't have the same kind of family life. They don't want the same thing from the world. It's like, where do they meet in all this? And it was very interesting to look at that from what happens when you stand still. I mean, because the sister Kate has never tried to get a life that looked any different than the one that was outlined for her, where Sonia has tried to find a life outside the drawing that was drawn for her. And I think a lot of conflict also on a political level comes from these two positions and two completely different ways of looking at life and the lack of ability to communicate. Because you're dislocated from each other.
Sonia works, as her job is, as a translator of Swedish crime novels into Danish. And I understand this is something that you did yourself as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for a few years I translated from Swedish and Norwegian to Danish in order to make money. And the very big difference, like a huge difference between Sonia and I, is that Sonia doesn't have a voice. Back when I did that, I was writing my own books. And that's actually a very important difference because Sonia doesn't have a voice and she doesn't write her own books. That means she's both being a parasite on this Swedish crime fiction writer, but he has also stolen her voice. And that is also a very painful situation to find yourself in as a person, to be voiceless. And I found it interesting to investigate that. What would that mean to be translated? Because, I mean, I'm translated into 20 languages or something these days. And I know from that experience of translation, I know that the translators get closer to me than my banker. because spending that much time with somebody else's language is very revealing. I usually say to my English translator, Mr. Hoekstra, I know you know more about me than you should. And I said, but you're such a nice man, you won't tell anyone, will you? And he laughs. But that is the deal. And imagine if you get so incredibly close or you to a person who's not good. And I don't think the crime fiction writer in this that Sonia translates is a very good person. And she actually has to live with him in her head every day without having a voice of her own. That was interesting to describe.
And also, I think, I mean, you get in a number of digs at the genre as well. I mean, as a Danish writer yourself, I guess the world knows Denmark, Sweden for this crime fiction, which is, you know, inevitably full of violently murdered women.
Yes, but, in the beginning, when particularly Sweden started out writing some amazing Scandi-Noir books and money poured into the industry. And then it spilled over to Norway and Denmark. So now they started, writing a lot of Scandi-Noir things also. But what happens when money pours into a genre is that a lot of people who shouldn't have run to this start running to it. And in order to make money, they make the perversions that happen in these books, they have to be worse every time. So a genre that, when good writers write it, is pretty cool, has also, in some cases, become pretty perverted. And I do find that it is really troubling that you have to kill a woman on page 20, that is part of the whole Sudoku of the crime fiction genre. But that said, there are some really good crime novels, Scandinavian origin, definitely. Not just the Svensson from my book, but a lot of others.
So I've been talking to Dorte Nors. We've been talking about her novel Mirror Shoulder Signal, which is out in paperback and in English from Pushkin Press. Dorte, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about it.
Well, thank you for talking to me.
This episode of Little Atoms was produced and presented by me, Neil Denny, and was first broadcast on Resonance 104.4 FM. Little Atoms is supported by 89UP, and the podcast is hosted by Acast. Find us on iTunes, and if you like the show, please do leave us a review. You can find old interviews, new journalism and more on our website littleatoms.com. Thanks for listening.